Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. I'm delighted to say that this podcast is sponsored by Peanut. Peanut is the app that helps you meet like-minded women who are trying to conceive, pregnant, or already mums. Peanut provides a safe space for women to build friendships, ask questions, and find support. Introducing you to women nearby who are at a similar stage in their journey, Peanut provides access to a community of women who are there to listen, share information, and offer valuable advice. Whether it's understanding IVF, PCOS, miscarriage, or pregnancy and beyond, Peanut is a place to connect with women who understand. I used to go to a weekly rhyme time class with Rin, and between the babies crying, the toddlers singing, and all the general noise and shenanigans, it could be really hard to stop and chat to some of the other mums. So when one of them connected with me on Peanut, it was fab. We made a beeline for each other at the next class and even went for a coffee together afterwards. Because of the app, it meant there was a friendly face in the room, which I have to say was just really lovely. You can download the app for free today. Head to peanut.app.link/finallypregnant or search for Peanut in your app store. And when you do, make sure you head over to the Finally Pregnant group. Hey there, how are you doing? It feels so good to be back here chatting to you again. If you're new around here, you are so welcome. If you're back again, thank you so much. I really appreciate your support, and that you're back means that you're getting lots from this too, which is amazing. This is the first episode of Series 3 of the Finally Pregnant podcast, and it is a jam-packed one right from the start, so I'm going to be getting on with it. What's been happening, other than the obvious new constant uncertainty of the world, what with COVID, I definitely thought we'd be past all this by now, didn't you? But we're not, and we're learning to cope, and it's a day-by-day thing. I want to recognise how hard it is for so many reasons, and particularly if you're listening here, that's probably because it's affecting your fertility treatment or your pregnancy or your birth, or because you're at home with little ones and you don't have the support you should have. I know how hard it is, and I want to recognise that. And although that's not the focus of this conversation, you know, it is something that we touch upon, and it's just so hard right now. I thought I'd give you a little Ren update. So for those of you who might not know, Ren is my wonderful daughter. She's 17 months old and she arrived with us following 7 years of infertility and pregnancy loss. She's at nursery today, and I've been navigating over the last 8 weeks or so, in particular, working while she's at nursery a little bit more. And it's wonderful. I love working, but it's also hard and I miss her. But, you know, we've got a good balance, I think. She is in no rush when it comes to moving around. She was really late crawler, way over a year. She isn't walking yet, but she's finally started standing up a little on her own, which is good. So she's moving in the right direction and she's cruising and things. Her sleep is generally, she says, rubbing the wood, generally good. And she's also starting to talk. So she's saying like mama and dada and Peppa Pig. Oh my goodness. I'm not joking. It's like crack to her. Can I say that? Is that like a really inappropriate thing to say? But she just loves it. Oh, and I love her. She's the best. So this week is Fertility Week in the UK, which is such an important time. And although we can talk about it all the time, and we should, this gives us an extra opportunity to raise the issue of infertility and really try to break the silence so that people who are going through it aren't doing it on their own. That's so important. There's lots of information and support out there, particularly this week. So please reach out if you need it. And yeah, just search for it. It's there. Ask me. I can point you in the right direction. That need for support doesn't stop when you get pregnant after fertility treatment. It really doesn't. And I actually recently surveyed fertility patients. And thank you so much if you saw that survey and you responded, because I wanted to know what support you had received from your clinics following successful treatment. I can tell you now that unfortunately 69% of people said they received no emotional support at all from their clinic. And that is really sad, because we need that ongoing support. And it's why I'm so glad, especially if you're pregnant right now, that you're here. Please do listen to other episodes of the podcast. I always recommend, specifically if you're pregnant right now, going to the very first episode, which is when I was pregnant, and I talk about my own pregnancy, and lots of people say that they feel really validated and understood when they hear that. So do head to episode 1 of season 1. I also run The Hangout, which is a community I started in early 2020, and it's full of amazing women, and a special hello to you if that's you. And they're all finally pregnant and parenting. And when you join that amazing group, you're also invited to 3 support groups a month, and you get access to a growing resource library, discounts, and lots more. So head over to catstrawbridge.com to find out more. All of the links to everything I mentioned will be in the show notes. So before I go into today's guest, I just want to ask you if you will subscribe to this podcast wherever you're listening. Please do rate it and also leave a review if you would. I think you can only do that on Apple, but if you are an Android user, then head over to my Facebook page, which is facebook.com/tryingyears, and please leave me a review there, or just pop me a DM on Instagram or an email, and then I can share them too. That would be amazing. But on to today's guest, who is the lovely Izzy Judd. I was lucky enough to meet Izzy a few years ago because of infertility, as it happens. She is a really, really beautiful individual. She is also a violinist, an author, wife to Harry, and now, thankfully, mother to Lola and Kit. Izzy shares her story today through infertility, a pregnancy loss, successful IVF pregnancy, a surprise natural pregnancy, and what the impact of all of that has had on her parenting. She is so open and honest, and I can't thank her enough for chatting to me and for all that she does on behalf of the fertility community. She really is a very, very special individual. I really hope that you enjoy our chat today, and I look forward to seeing you really, really soon. Take care. Bye-bye. Hi there, Izzy. How are you doing?
Hi, Kat. I am good, thank you. I say I'm good. I'm currently in a massive building renovation at home, which is really exciting, but also total chaos.
It's hard work, isn't it? It's worth it in the long run, but we did our renovations in our house before we were pregnant or before we had a little one, but especially doing it with Lola and Kit in the house. It's hard enough as an adult, but with them, I'm sure it's
we were due to start literally the week before lockdown was announced. So Harry was like, I don't think we should. And I was like, oh, I'll be fine. It'll be, you know, kind of totally in denial. And then thank goodness, because if we'd had a half opened house and then lockdown, So yeah, grateful in that sense, but now willing it along so that we don't get stuck in another, you know, well, who knows?
I know, we're all wondering, aren't we? Which is not a nice way to live, really, is it? Kind of, yeah, waiting for the next announcement about change.
No, sitting in the unknown. Well, actually, it's very appropriate for what we're talking about today with fertility. It is sitting in that unknown of just not knowing what the future is going to bring and not being in control of it, and the anticipation and the fear. It's actually a lot of parallels.
You're not wrong. And I know there'll be people out there listening now, and this is going out during fertility week as it happens. So whether you're listening during that week or thereafter, who are listening because they love hearing the stories of hope. So they are trying right now and they're going through so much uncertainty on top of the kind of normal uncertainty of fertility, but because of the pandemic at the moment. So I think we just want to kind of take a moment to say that our heart goes out to you if that's you at the moment. And then for those of you who are pregnant, all the uncertainty around that and, you know, appointments and midwife appointments and scans and whether partners can go, it's just, it is a really, really hard time. And the reason we're talking to each other today is because you know that, because you've been through your fertility journey and your two pregnancies, which sadly was followed by an initial miscarriage. Can you share a little bit about your time around then?
Sure, of course. Just echoing what you said, just to begin with, my thoughts have turned a lot to the people going through fertility treatment at the moment, because I can't even begin to imagine. You feel so lonely as it is going through fertility struggles. And then adding this on top, that layer it must bring. So I completely echo what you're saying there. And again, with the people that are pregnant, might be in a nervous pregnancy. I know certainly for me, we did sadly miscarry our first pregnancy. And it's a grief and it's a real loss. And at the moment, because there is such a huge sort of global pandemic going on, we're sort of not necessarily validating our own issues because the bigger picture, the perspective is so distorted at the moment. And I just think it's really, really important to allow the grief and allow the frustrations and allow those emotions without feeling like you need to say, but I know I'm lucky, or but I know it's not so bad, because actually it is really hard. By far, my fertility struggles was the toughest thing I had to face. It was such a shock. I think I just really thought that I was going to get pregnant. I just knew that I wanted to be a mum. I'd always, since I was a little girl, I always wanted a family. It was always part of the picture. I was young. Harry and I, we were healthy. Why was it so difficult? I couldn't understand it. And I so quickly went into a decline of, I failed. I'm not good enough. I don't deserve this. I didn't want to go out. I was totally, well, the way I responded to Clomid, which was the medication that I was put on initially for polycystic ovaries, I responded quite well in a way that I just felt very bloated. I hormonally felt very up and down. I was all over the place. And it was just so quick, that sort of feeling of complete, can't even think of the word for it, because it was just so desperate. I just felt so desperate. And everyone around me was getting pregnant. It felt like that. It felt like it was all I could see. It was just everywhere. And I just wanted to fix it. And I feel in hindsight, looking back, the things I know now, I would have dealt differently. But it's easy to say that in hindsight. But I do feel like I rushed into intervention and trying to fix the problem rather than actually taking a step back and looking at the whole picture. But I mean, that's a whole other podcast, probably, Kat, of my own personal, feelings now looking back of my diagnosis and everything.
Well, I think we just want to get on, don't we? It makes me think of, I was reading an article that you had worked with Tommy's on. And following your miscarriage, I think you'd said that you wanted to just crack straight on with the next round of IVF. And actually, it was Harry that said, no, hang on a minute, we need to grieve this miscarriage. And so often people contact me and say, when should I go again? When should I go again? Mm. And my advice, listen to it, decide if it's right for you or not. You know, this is what you should do, but wait until you're really ready. And you will know when you're ready, because you don't want to look back and think, I wasn't ready. You know, so almost give it another month or another month, because what was written in that article was you do really need to grieve your miscarriage. Mm. And that grief, I suspect that's one of the things, as well as your fertility journey, that will have affected your pregnancy when you did get finally pregnant with, as we know now, Lola. Talk to us about that pregnancy. So that was an IVF pregnancy, wasn't it? Was that your second round?
Yeah, so my first pregnancy was from a fresh round of IVF. We had three embryos. And yeah, the first one I did miscarry. And as you say, I do think it's not just emotionally, it's physically the recovery of miscarriage. There's so many things people don't tell you. And I bled for a good 6 to 8 weeks afterwards. And it was this relentless reminder. And, you know, that was a really, really tricky thing, I felt, physically as well as emotionally. But you do get there, you get your head together again, and with the support system around you, and you get to a place where you feel it's right to go again. And I was grateful of Harry sort of flagging to me that I should have that space. So we decided to go back for the pregnancy that resulted in Lola, about 5 months later. I mean, right from the start, that was a totally different experience, because I just was setting myself up. I couldn't let myself go at all into the pregnancy. The moment I found out, I think I felt elated for about 30 seconds. And then I was just full of fear and getting past the markers in time that of what happened the time before, and getting to those points in the weeks of pregnancy. And I don't think I really truly relaxed until she was born. And actually, something that really took me by surprise was Harry's reaction when she was born, because he was so beside himself, and I just, with tears, and I think he had held it together for so many years, and it was this sudden, just total release, more than me actually. He just I can't describe that moment. And then she's there, and you just feel every second and every minute of that wait was for you. And it's just, you can't describe that feeling of that weight being lifted and that just pure elation, you know.
Oh, it makes me feel a bit emotional. Now, I've talked about this before on episodes. I've got a photo of Ren when she'd literally just been born and was rugby tackled onto, like rugby thrown, I say, kind of onto my chest, umbilical cord still attached. And it's a photo we've chosen to keep completely private at the moment. But every single emotion from those 7 years of trying, you can read on my face. It's just, it's an indescribable feeling. It was everything. And I can definitely understand the idea, like going through fertility journeys. Someone once said to me about how our partners often hold it together for us because we're the ones going through it, like physically we're going through it. And I suspect that's exactly what was happening with Harry, you know, during the pregnancy, supporting you and, you know, being stoic and strong, and like so many of our partners and probably friends and family do as well. And that was just his moment when she arrived.
It really
just
was.
To actually, yeah, release all of that and just think, yes, you are finally here.
And I think your outpour of how your emotion that you're feeling now and is because what happened never leaves you. So that emotion that you're feeling is, it's because it's just defined you. It's part of who you are. It's, you know, you can't take away that what you went through in order to, you know, have a child, and the compassion that you feel for other people and the empathy. So it's not like, which is why I think this podcast, everything you're doing, Kat, you always do with such beautiful sensitivity, because the fact is that we do go on, a lot of people who have successful, you know, fertility treatment, it doesn't mean that you've gone, oh, great, I can now, you know, you're tuned differently forever. And that's certainly how I feel, my outlook on things. I now, whenever I see somebody pregnant, I always think, I wonder what your experience was. How did you get here? Like, there's no assumption anymore. And I'm kind of feel quite grateful that I was able to be part of that, that I could now experience something very different and very unique and beautiful in its own way.
Yeah, I completely agree. And thank you so much for your kind words. When I was trying, I always struggled with people who knew how their story ends, as I put it. And I remember thinking I was in a difficult place, I suppose. But, you know, you don't understand, like, because you know how your story ends. But being on the other side of it, what I know now is that, like, exactly like you say, it doesn't leave you. And I squeeze Ren every day with gratitude. And I love that I'm always conscious that I'm not necessarily, well, I am always supporting people who are trying to conceive, like that goes without saying. But a lot of my work now is to do with pregnancy. But I think as we raise the awareness overall about infertility, I think then that allows us to raise specific areas which really have had no coverage or very little. Another one that I feel really strongly about, because it was so close to being our story really, was about being childless, not by choice. And that's a really difficult thing for people to, I think, on the fertility side, to kind of hear and accept that that might be them. And for people who don't understand anything about fertility, to really get under the skin of and understand. So yeah, like we all, and as I mentioned, this is going out during fertility week. It's so important. If it's right for you, because it's not right for everyone, but if you feel comfortable sharing your story and speaking out, that is, it is really so important that we continue to break the taboos around infertility and all that that touches.
And I think another thing, which there's a couple of things which I tend to now sort of say, is write. If you can sit with a piece of paper and write, you would be amazed at how cathartic it is. And also as a point of reference to go back to. And also it might be something that you feel a loved one could read if you're finding it difficult to really express it. Sometimes when you're just sat with a paper and pen, not always, but you would be amazed about what actually comes out. It's another way to release. And the other thing, I think, as I'm still surrounded, I have somebody very, very close to me at the moment who's going through treatment. And the thing is, there's so many parallels of, as you go into motherhood, that are very similar, actually. But it's this comparison. It's comparing yourself with others. What am I doing wrong? What are they doing? Why are they getting it? Why did that cycle work for them when they had that many? Or as a mother, that mother seems to be having it all under control and all nailed, and I'm not. And there's actually a lot of things within that you are learning through your fertility journey, which will support you into motherhood. And it's actually setting you up pretty well to handle difficult, sticky emotions. And I think with this particular person who I'm talking to at the moment, it reminds me of that when you're in that stage of, how many eggs did you get? How many fertilized? What day did they put it back in? Like, you know, did you have baths? Did you, you know, all these things that go on in your head. And actually, it's so important to stay in your lane. And what is right for you is what is right for you. Your story is not the same as anybody else's. Yours is unique. And I think it's really important to keep your eye on that, that you don't drift into other people's stories, because it can make you feel quite negative, I think. And it can bring in those sorts of stories and scenarios and that sort of niggling person on your shoulder that is kind of at you rather than being your friend through all this. So I think those have been two of the things I try to sort of say, because they also help me in motherhood as well as through fertility treatment.
Yeah, you're so right. And all of those, going back to the pandemic, I think we're all feeling all of that so much more, aren't we? Because we're all on a certain level of anxiety and concern and worry and just instability, I guess, because of what we mentioned earlier on and all the change. And then dealing with all of that, it just makes it even more intense.
And it's a natural instinct, isn't it? I mean, it's what we all do. And as you say, you know, now it's even more heightened, but it's just, I suppose, having a mindful awareness of what is going on in that mind of yours and just checking in.
Yeah, best advice. It really is. Absolutely. Just bring yourself back and kind of ground yourself with who you are and your own story. So you have Lola.
Yep.
What impact, like you've kind of talked a bit there, but what impact do you think that the previous few years, your journey to having her, has had on your parenting, you know, right at the beginning? Because, you know, you literally are, I assume this is the same for you, because I think it's the same for most people. You go home, and if you have a partner, it's the three of you. And obviously there's multiple births and things. So, you know, this is any number of people, depending on the situation, but it's kind of you and the baby. What did that look like? How did you feel? And do you think what you've been through impacted on that? And how, if so?
We brought Lola home, and I just remember she was in the car seat on our living room floor, and Harry and I sat on the sofa and we just stared at her. I don't know how long for. we just could not believe it. And it was this feeling of like, okay, what now? And, you know, those early weeks, if I think about it, I'm going to be completely honest here because I think it's important that I am. And hormonally, we're so all over the place. But I did have a slight moment of, I was so used to it being just Harry and I found it quite difficult to adapt. I was sort of almost grieving a time in my life because I felt I had spent so long fixated on becoming pregnant and then fixated on the pregnancy that I hadn't really given my marriage and my early years with Harry as husband and wife that lovely sort of time, the two of us, because I was just so fixated on becoming a family. So I felt a little sadness that I hadn't made the most of him. I felt like I hadn't really looked at him properly. And then all of a sudden, Lola was here and he had been my absolute rock. And I almost felt guilty for not being there enough for him. So that was something I really kind of remember thinking about. Lola was the dream. As a baby, she was literally just a sunshine. She woke up smiling. She was just the dream. And I can say that now because Kit, my second, was not the dream. But Lola, I love him, totally different experience. But whilst Lola was the dream, I was all over the place, all over the place. I couldn't sleep because I was worried she was too hot, too cold. The breastfeeding was the biggest challenge. I mean, more than giving birth for me personally. I mean, the scene of just cabbage leaves and expressing and like getting into warm showers to try and get this milk. The pain, it was really tough. And I found it very, very difficult breastfeeding in front of other people. And I found the visitors overwhelming. And I just wanted to be shut in a room with Harry and my baby and naked and Lola naked and just sort of get, I don't know, some sort of feeding going. So that was tough. When people would say, oh, is she a good sleeper? Because that's just standard question that people ask you when you've got a baby.
They're a baby.
But this was a thing, Kat. Actually, Lola was, but I was terrible. I mean, I just didn't sleep. I was just wired. I found going out really nerve-wracking. What if she cried because she needed a feed and I need to get home to feed because I didn't feel comfortable enough. And it was sore and all the rest of it. And going into shops, because she was a winter baby, she was all wrapped up for winter. And then I'd go into a shop to do a food shop and I'd be like, oh no, what if she's too hot now? And I was so unprepared for motherhood in the sense of I had everything practically sorted. The clothes, the buggy, you know, where she would sleep. Everything I could control, but babies that you can't. And it was the biggest lesson because it wasn't just me anymore. I knew when I was going to, I was in control of my decisions, but with a baby, they rule the roost. So it was tough. It was really, really tough. And added on top of that was, but you're so lucky because there's so many people that are trying for a baby and you mustn't complain and you don't need to ask for help because you can do this yourself. You know, it was almost this underlying, I had felt a failure for not being able to conceive and for my body to have not been working as I believed it should be doing as a woman. As a mother, I was not going to be defeated. I was going to be able to cope and be strong and do this by myself. And actually, I couldn't. I needed help and I needed the support. So yeah, I mean, it was a roller coaster ride. And I think now looking back, I just wish I hadn't made such a, I wish I'd been able to enjoy it a little bit more, those first early weeks. But I really couldn't. I was just so worried about being a good mum to Lola. And it was, yeah, it was tough. It was really tough.
I'm sorry to hear that, yeah, you feel like you didn't enjoy them, because that is sad to hear, isn't it? But I understand that because, you know, as much as my experience was different, there were definitely times where, yeah, I didn't enjoy it as much. And everyone says it, and I know everyone says it, but they're so right. That's why they say it. It goes so quickly. It doesn't feel like it at the time. It feels like it's going to go on forever, but it does go so quickly. But you mentioned there about kind of feeling anxious and things. And that's something, having read your book, Dare to Dream, that you talked about during your fertility journey and your kind of trying to conceive years. Is that something that then carried on through your pregnancy? And what support did you seek? Was there any support for you during that time?
Yeah, anxiety. My dear friend who comes and gives me warning signs. Anxiety's been in my life forever. And it's, as I say, now I've learned to understand that it is there for a reason, and it is my warning that something's not quite right, and that I might be overwhelmed, or I might be tired, I might be stressed. It's there for a reason. You know, your body responds and your mind for a reason. So funnily enough, when Lola was born, although I had anxiety of... I wouldn't say it was so much anxiety, because having experienced extreme anxiety, it wasn't like that. It was more that I was sort of that duck that was on the surface floating along, but underneath I was paddling like mad, but I was coping. And actually, as we started to get into a routine and things settled down after those first 12 weeks, I was able to just enjoy and motherhood and relax a bit more. And because Lola was predictable once we got into that routine, I was very present all the time, because my whole day was around what she needed. So I was never really thinking ahead in my head or behind, because it was right, and now we do this, and now we do that, and then we're going to go here, and then so actually, with anxiety, the best place you can try and bring yourself back to is the moment right now. So in a way, Lola was actually a real help for that. But as I went on to have Kit and I had the two to look after, that was when the anxiety came flooding back. And unfortunately, when Kit was 8 weeks old, he got bronchiolitis and was really quite poorly. And we had a kind of blue light situation to hospital because he was struggling to breathe. And Harry was, I couldn't contact him because he was in interviews that day, and I have no family nearby, and obviously a newborn baby and a toddler. It was utterly terrifying, and that whole experience set me right back, and my anxiety was just, if they would wake in the night, I would go to worst case scenario and all the what ifs, and that was when really I thought, I've got to get back onto my mindfulness path, because it was the thing that saved me before with anxiety. And as a mother, you think you haven't got time, or it's another thing to add to your already ridiculously long to-do list. But I discovered through working on a mindfulness course that actually there were moments in the day as a mum that I could incorporate it and start to teach Lola and Kit the tools and the skills to look after their mental well-being too, because it was really important to me, because I didn't want Lola and Kit to experience some of the anxiety that I had as a child. And so it's sort of been something which I have been quite keen to do as a family.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And we will come on to the work that you're doing now in particular in a moment. But if I can just bring you back. So Kit, you got pregnant about a year after you'd had Lola, is that right? And it was a natural pregnancy, so you didn't need any intervention in this instance. Can you talk to us, because that does happen, you know, we always hear it when we're first trying and, you know, we don't have children and, you know, oh, people stop trying, or then they have one plenty of people have said it to me, oh, you'll probably pop another one out after Ren. Hasn't happened, but it does. I know that it does. How did that feel for you? Was just, can you talk us through finding out, were you trying, was it kind of actually a bit of an accident, even though obviously we know how all these things happen?
The stories are just the worst when you're going through fertility. Oh my god, if someone else was like said to Harry, she just needs to relax, I think he would have, I that comment just drove him up the wall, because it's not my default setting. I'm just not that person. It was just so easy to say, so flippant to say, and yet so hard to do, or, you know, go on holiday, or, oh, you know, I don't need to say it, but it is pretty tedious, those well-meaning comments. But what happened with Kit was, so after Lola, I breastfed Lola for about 7 months. And then one day my period came and I could not believe it, because for me, my struggle was to have periods. And I ran down the stairs. I was like, Harry, what? He was like, what? What? It's like my period. Because for me, it was like, oh, wow, I've had this baby and now my body's working. You know, it was like this real, I felt really proud. I felt really proud of my body for once.
I'm just going to stop you there. I'm really sorry. But just going back to what you were saying about other people's stories and staying in your lane, like so much of what you've said, like we have kind of similar parallels actually about the breastfeeding and about the periods coming back. But your reaction was, yes, brilliant. My reaction was, oh, bloody Nora, already, you know, but someone did say to me, because mine came back, I think it was about 6-8 months or so. And I was like, oh, I thought I was going to have a good year or so while I was breastfeeding. But someone did say exactly what you've said to me, actually, that it means that your body is getting back to kind of normal. And for you in particular, in this instance, you know, this is a whole new normal for you in a really positive way. So, yeah.
Yeah, with no intervention, no hormone treatment, no nothing. My body just did it. For me, that was massive. I was elated. So we had always kind of said we would not take precaution. We would just, because why would we? It would just, we would see. But I knew things were different. You know your body. For me, my problem with trying to conceive was actually the fact that I wasn't releasing eggs. I wasn't ovulating. I wasn't doing anything. So my body was basically a bit dormant. So when I was then starting to work again, I suppose, I knew that we had more of a chance because I was having a cycle. So 2 months later, I think instinctively, you know, and obviously having gone through two pregnancies, I get acid reflux. And that was one of my earliest symptoms. And I was getting it a lot. And I had this day where I was absolutely convinced it was implanting. I could sense it. But I did a pregnancy test and it was negative. And I was like, oh. And then I felt really, I was like, oh no, am I back here? Because then in my head, I was ready to go again. And I didn't want those months with Lola to then be overshadowed by trying for another. And I was very conscious of that. So I was a bit disappointed and I felt a bit deflated. But then my period didn't come and it was New Year's Day and I went downstairs with Lola. Actually, she was in the loo with me and I did the test and it was positive and I sort of gave Lola the biggest squeeze because I was terrified. I was terrified. And also because I felt, but I'm not at a clinic. Well, what if I need to be taking extra progesterone? What if I need to be doing this? And it was New Year's Day and I couldn't speak, you know, it was immediately, although shock, because I wasn't expecting it to happen, there was also then fear. But I went upstairs and I told Harry and it was this sort of amazing, the thing you hear about, New Year's Day, I woke him up in the morning and, you know, you kind of think, is this a joke? Like you've gone through all those struggles and then all of a sudden it's like this fairy tale. And then I felt very, you know, I had talked about our fertility struggles through social media and I was writing a book. How was I going to say, do an announcement in a way that was sensitive but hopeful? And that's what I really hoped, that people would just find hope from it, that there is possibility and it can happen. And I just was overwhelmed by the love and the absolute warmth that I got from the community. And that, you know, meant huge amounts to me. So then Kit arrived in our world and I've been in shock ever since. He is just, oh my goodness, he is just a total breed, like different breed in every possible way. And I, as you say, as you were saying about Ren, you know, there is not a day, even if it's been absolutely like hard work and all the rest of it, when they're asleep, And I go and sit on their bed and I thank every single star that I have them both. So it's been quite a road to having our family, really.
It really has. And they're very different babies, like you said, and children. Were the pregnancies different? And do you think that was down to one being IVF, perhaps, and one natural? But then also you had been through a successful pregnancy, so perhaps you had a little bit more faith in your body the second time round. Mm-hmm. Can you draw any comparisons or differences?
I mean, with your first pregnancy, you have all the time to nurture yourself and your pregnancy. And I remember I would put little earbuds on my tummy for Lola to listen to music. And to this day, there is this music which will just calm her that I used to play all the time. We knew exactly how many weeks, days, all the rest of it. In my pregnancy with Kit, it was just not. I had to work out how many weeks, and I don't know if I played him music as much, and I was exhausted because Lola was only a year. I craved different foods with Kit. I was shaped very differently. We didn't know the gender with either, because for me, that was something that could be left to surprise when everything else I felt through fertility was so planned. So that was our personal choice. So I didn't know whether Kit was going to be a girl or a boy, but I certainly had different pregnancies.
And what about emotionally? Like you said that you're exhausted because you're running around after a one-year-old. Mm. But do you think you were as anxious perhaps the second time round? Or
I think I was. I think because I hadn't seen Kit through the stages of, well, you know, with Lola, I knew the insides of my ovaries so well. I'd been scanned and I was really being sort of looked after. But with Kit, there was no follow-ups and scans, and it was natural. And that was kind of scary because I felt very responsible that my body was doing this completely on its own. I wasn't taking additional things, although I did start to, I added on the progesterone once I spoke to my doctor, but I felt a lot more pressure naturally to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I think that different people are going to react differently. You could have turned around and said to me, because I'd had, you know, a previous pregnancy that had been successful and, you know, my body had done this itself, I felt really comfortable in it. You know, like I think there'll be people who feel like that. But I can totally, you saying that, like you knew what Lola looked like as an embryo, like literally right from the beginning, even, you know, the follicles kind of, so, you know, but, and not having that, is it physical? Like when you're looking at something, I guess, you know, that reassurance, that visual, mm-hmm. that's the word I'm looking for, reassurance mm-hmm. at those scans. Like we had 16 scans pretty much in the first 16 weeks, give or take. And some of that was because we had a loss and I didn't really recognize that loss in that scan, and so a few days later I needed to kind of go back and see as we know her to be Ren, because I was, you know, my focus had been on the loss in the original scan or in that particular scan, and I wanted to go back and give something to Ren, you know, to the baby, like our little survivor, as we called her. So we did have a lot of scans, but I guess because this was a natural pregnancy, you didn't have all of those, whether it be in clinic scans, or did you wait until your 12 weeks?
I had one early scan and then it was just literally as they were. I also had this feeling of, so with Lola, obviously the first pregnancy we miscarried, then Lola was a frozen embryo. Then we have one other frozen embryo. They actually showed me what it's like. I mean, that was really quite a moment. So I had a slight feeling of, I wonder whether I'll ever meet that one, and slightly feeling like I'd gone through so much and then this had happened naturally. But what about the one that I worked really hard? And even now I think about that a lot. And it's something which I'd love to talk to more people about, because it really does sort of pull at me. And there must be so many of us, you know, in that sort of golden opportunity of having these other ones that, you know, are basically siblings, even twins. I mean, and with Lola, it was literally a case of eeny, meeny, miny, moe, because the qualities, they were very similar embryos. And I just think, oh, just imagine if I hadn't met Lola. And yeah, so there was, I sat with that in my pregnancy, and I still now think about that.
I do, yeah, all the time. And someone said to me quite recently, they were talking about their child, and their child was following a frozen transfer, and the embryo had been in the freezer for 3 years. And it was like, God, I waited 3 years to meet them. And obviously, you know, the time that had gone into before and then creating the embryos as well, but actually they'd been in that freezer for 3 years, and then they finally met them. And it really made me think about our frozen, and, you know, we are undecided, really. I can't imagine not trying, but there's a lot. You know, I'm much older because we took a long old time to get there. And I feel that as a parent sometimes. I do feel quite old with Ren. I'm 42. And I wonder, can I put my body through it again? And I know people have babies a bit older. You know, that's kind of fairly normal in our community. But there's so much. But then I just think, could we not give them a chance? And I don't know if we can not give them a chance, because exactly like you say, that could so easily be Ren sitting in there, and a different baby could be here with us. It's a whole different conversation, isn't it? And it's a massive conversation, like
it
you
is
say.
A massive conversation.
Yeah, but maybe for another time.
Yes.
In this instance, I think we're just both wistfully thinking about our embryos now a little bit. But bring us back to now as a parent. Yeah. And you, we're going to talk in a minute about something that you have launched fairly recently called Pause. And and I said, I'm trying to think how I said it before we started, how it's helping you parent or something. And you said, oh, no, it's how it's helping me cope.
Yeah, exactly.
So tell me about your parenting now, because your Instagram, like, you do loads of activities. There's always lots of music. There's ballet. There's lots and lots of things. How is it being parent to two? And tell me about, and I was talking to my mum about this yesterday, who's got four children, about having a second. And, you know, you think, the way people describe it to me, and my mum did yesterday, is, you know, you think you can't love anyone as much, and you can, but it doesn't take away from, you know, your heart just expands rather than it kind of giving a little bit over, that kind of thing. So talk to me about that.
I'm one of four as well, and I often say to my mum, how did you do four? And she said, well, you were left in the car a few times doing the head count. Life was a bit different then, I think. As I said, I got into the swing of Lola, and I kind of understood what she needed. And Kit was just a completely different kettle of fish, and it's taken me this long to work out how to parent him, because I sort of assumed what I did for one, I could do for Kit, but actually his needs are totally different. His interests are different. His character, of course, is completely different. And I know that seems really obvious, but when motherhood throws you by surprise and is a bit of a shock and a huge learning curve, when you have another, it's another learning curve, because you're learning and you're getting to know a completely different child, and trying to keep them both entertained and stimulated when they like quite different things is challenging. And especially, you know, add in lockdown, and you've got Lola, who will just loves doing arts and crafts, and she's quite sort of creative like that. Kit wants to be following Harry around the house, doing the DIY and the drilling, and the, I can't get him really to sit. And I'm like, why? Because Lola sits, and, you know, and it's just been, how can I think of things that they can both enjoy that we can start to do together? And that's where, I suppose, motherhood, I have found since being the mum of two, where the challenge has really begun. Because also, I think your children, there are characteristics in your children that remind you of either yourself or your husband or different members of your family. But for us, Kit is very like Harry in character, and I'm more like Lola. So I naturally, there's an understanding. So sometimes I have to say to Harry, can you explain this? Because this is your language. So Kit, he gets so sort of, he's so beautifully sensitive for a boy. I just adore that about him. But the last thing I feel like I want to do is give him a cuddle. But actually, that's what he needs. He just needs a cuddle. And something which I found very useful within the sort of mindfulness side of things is getting your breath in the rhythm with your child's, and that can really help them slow down. So if you imagine that, you know, you're holding your baby, even as a newborn, even to toddlers, and just really going to the rhythm, because babies and children breathe from their stomachs. We as adults, everything gets much higher. And as mums, it's basically in our heads, we're so tense. So if we can try and help our breath kind of come back to our stomach and just help everybody slow down the breathing, that can be really helpful. And with Kit as well, a lot of it has been, by the way, this is just what works for me. I'm just talking to you about my experience. But with Kit, naming an emotion has been really helpful. To your feeling angry, or you're feeling sad, or you're feeling, and he'll kind of go, yes, mummy. And it's sort of just acknowledging that. But to be honest, what takes me by surprise is Lola's reaction. So she has a real connection, they both, with each other. And often Kit will calm Lola down and Lola will calm Kit down. So sometimes I sort of just leave them to, when they're not squabbling. but that sort of gorgeous sibling, natural, instinctive love has its own place. And I remember that with my brother. I remember really clearly him being told off by my parents, which he always was because he was just really naughty. And we were in the back of the car and him holding my hand. And there's just this sort of something that you can't explain.
Like a solidarity.
Yeah. So it's a roller coaster. And that's why I think, you know, on social media, you see a picture of someone's life, you know, it's like you probably, Kat, you know, we've found ourselves in a generation where social media has become more prevalent. It's certainly not somewhere I expected to be. You know, I trained as a violinist. I'm a musician. I just happened to marry somebody that was in a band and therefore in the public eye. And then social media sort of followed on from that. And I really loved being able to talk about my fertility experiences through this community. And I felt it was really helpful. What I would never want is for people to look at those squares on Instagram and think that there is some sort of only seeing the best bits, because that is just not reality. You know, it is not reality. And I do try to put up the harder things, the stickier things, the reality of it. And I also try and balance my life so that I can be present with my children, that I'm not always feeling like I'm needing to capture absolutely everything for everyone and actually be able to be present for the children. So using mindfulness and now working on my new project, Pause, is sort of a way that I hope to help to continue to keep this sort of solidarity between parenting, to kind of support one another. And it not all be sort of the joyful squares of family life and, you know, but actually a bit of, oh, this is really hard, or this is actually really, my head is like a computer that's got a million tabs open and I don't know where to start. And, you know, Pause is hopefully a place to kind of help people and be a support, because I need it too. So, yeah.
Yeah, no, I think you're absolutely right. And it goes back to that comparison. You know, and people putting, it is a highlight reel a lot of the time with social media, and that's not necessarily the case. Like, my social media experience is that I'm rubbish at it, is the truth. Like Facebook, I never did a lot. If you added me as a friend on Facebook, anyone, you would find that I haven't posted on there for like a decade, probably. Maybe an odd screen for IVF thing, but nothing more than that, really. Sometimes I wish I captured more, but it's not my go-to default to take loads of pictures and do lots of pieces and you know, kind of stories and things. And sometimes I get annoyed with myself because I think I would love to have them, because I'm not taking them at all, I guess. It's not that I'm not taking them and then, or that I'm taking them and then not putting them on social media. Good, bad or ugly, these pictures aren't really being taken all that much. I'm not very good at it. So in a way, social media is good, I think, because it encourages that. But like you say, it also sometimes takes us away from the present and makes us kind of wonder why everyone else's life is perfect. But I think one of the things that you do is you put, you know, which is where like a lot of your work's come from, your book with Everything Now, but it is the coping mechanisms. And the reason, and this is how I read that, the reason that you need or are showing a coping mechanism is because it's not perfect. Mm-hmm. And this is how you help support yourself, you help support your children, because life isn't perfect and being a parent isn't perfect. But there's things that we can bring in, and that's what you're sharing, to help other people and support other people. So to bring us back, we said it right near the beginning, you know, to ground ourselves and each other, which is really, really important.
Yeah. And I think, you know, we are all human. Amount of followers, amount of likes, amount of comments. Ultimately, behind that picture is a human and a human existence and a human experience. And everybody is only trying to do their best. And I think to be kind and to teach kindness and to be, I don't know, I've talked quite a bit about my brother Rupert, who sadly suffered a really serious car accident when he was 17, and he's brain damaged, and I shared recently quite a lot of his music videos. He plays the French horn, and amazingly he's got this carer who plays the piano, and we haven't been able to see Rupert. He's been in and out of lockdown so many times, and it's been desperate and just been really, really hard. But something about Rupert that I just admire so much is that he takes everybody completely the same way. He has no awareness of to be judgmental. It's just because of his kind of capacity and what's happened in his brain injury. Everybody is exactly the same to him. And it's such an important thing to remember that social media, everybody is just exactly the same. And we are, you know, certainly for me, when I sort of put out the things for mindfulness, it's because I'm going, you know, Kit just won't sleep, or Lola is starting school and she's full of all the nerves. And that's just like everybody else. You know, that is just those sort of life stages that we go through as parents. And it feels like we're always having to learn to let go a bit. From the moment that umbilical cord's cut, you're letting go a little bit more. And then there's all these steps. They start nursery, they start school, and it's all this learning to let go. And I think, you know, having tools, that's where mindfulness has been my real anchor, because there's loads of things I can use with Lola. So, for example, we do yums and yucks for the day and Kit, where we talk about two yums, things that have been yummy and something that's been yucky, to just sort of start talking about the fact that we feel things that are difficult too, and we have good experiences. So that's really been sort of important for me personally as a mum. It's something that I've just chosen to do because I really want to support their mental health, especially, well, at the moment more than ever, but also just moving forward into a very different world of, you know, social media and everything else.
Yeah, I think that's really important. And it's so simple, but it's so, you know, bringing back kind of that gratitude and that recognition and the validation of the not so good things as well. It's just, and it's a nice reason to have a conversation as well at the end of the day, isn't it? And like you said earlier on, having some like commonality, if that's the right word, because they all do have different interests and different things they want to do, but actually bringing it back to something that you can all do together.
Absolutely. There's loads of things. I mean, and on pause, Kat, just to explain just very briefly that when you go onto the website, there are 5 different buttons. So you've got play, pause, rewind, fast forward and shift. And within each of those buttons are tips and exercises. So that might be something to watch, listen or read. So play is for the moment that you want to be very present in an activity with your child in kind of a playful way. As mums, we forget how to be playful. We're very serious. Well, not all of us, but you tend to be like, come on, mum, you know, mum duty. And actually, you can still be playful and have fun and all the rest of it. Pause is for the moment where you just need to come back, check in, breathe. Most of us will go through our day without really thinking about breathing. When you read emails or messages, you're likely to hold your breath. And breathing is the natural thing that will help calm down the nervous system. It's the go-to, and that goes for children as well. Rewind is for all the things that were sort of the guilt, the past stuff, that, oh, could have done that better today, should have done that better. The fast forward button is the anxiety of the future, the unknowns. And then shift is the quick, help me, everything's in a complete meltdown, including me and the kids. What can I do? So each button is there to support you. And that's basically what Pause is. And then there's a whole Pause Life section with features and articles about fun things like trainers and what to do at the weekend and Halloween ideas. And so hopefully it's a bit of a virtual hub of somewhere that, you know, mums can go to for or parents for just support and advice and a bit of light relief as well.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Izzy. I suspect that there's going to be hopefully not too much more than all the other things, but quite a lot of shifting at the moment.
A lot of shifting.
Hopefully lots of playing as well. Exactly. But I really, really appreciate you talking to me today. It's just, yeah, it's really special to have you on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for having me, Kat. It's been lovely just to have a chat.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. It's been a while, hasn't it? So
yeah, exactly.
It's lovely to talk to you. And all of the links to everything you've mentioned and to your social media and things will be in the show notes. So if anyone wants to check any of that out, they can do. Thank you so much. And enjoy the rest of your day. Okay.
Thanks, Kat.
Thanks a lot. Bye-bye.